Let's go.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Everybody who's on sauce for not knowing who Jessica Alba is needs to back off and correct themselves.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Aaron Rodgers was like pointing to everyone in the room. He's like, do you know who that is? And I think it was like a joke because the kid didn't know anybody.
Earlier on the show, New York Jets head coach Robert Saleh. Coming up, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Chris Mannix. From Prime Video's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, actor Kevin Pollak. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Great chat with Robert Saleh, head coach of the New York Jets. Also coming up on this program, Kevin Pollak of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel will be in studio in hour number three. By the way, also on the, let me get this right, Don Rickles would have been today 97 years old. So obviously we'll go down the casino wormhole and a little bit of the usual suspects with Kevin Pollak when he joins us in studio in hour number three. But joining us right here to kick off hour number two, fresh back from Guadalajara, where he watched Canelo light up the sky. Joining us here to talk about the association as well, which he also covers for Sports Illustrated, is Chris Mannix. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Rich.
How are you, brother?
I'm good. I'm, you know,
so
getting by.
Okay, so were you in flight when Jokic and Matt Ishbia?
No, I was back. Okay, I got back early on Sunday, so I got to watch the Celtics and the Sixers, and then whatever happened in Denver with Jokic and Ishbia. Wild. I'm just waiting to see what the NBA rules on this. It'll probably come later today, how they decide to, you know, adjudicate all this, because there's a couple different ways you can go. Number one, you have to look at Jokic and put aside the fact that it was Matt Ishbia. 99 times out of 100, if you see a player interact with a fan in the way Jokic did, some kind of suspension is coming. Now, there were mitigating circumstances. You had Matt Ishbia seem to make contact first. It was Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Suns, who kind of held onto the ball a little bit too long.
Not kind of. He flat out, like I was saying at the top of the show, like if he was back on the Spartan bench, the possession arrow would have been pointing in the direction of the Suns.
But,
you know, I mean,
I can tell you this, and this goes back, go back a little bit further to take it, to zoom out a bit. Mm-hmm. When Draymond Green got suspended, most of it was because of the stomp that he did to Domas Sabonis. But part of it was how he incited the crowd afterwards. That was taken into account when the NBA made its decision. Adam Silver was sitting right there in Sacramento watching the whole thing, and Draymond was shouting at the crowd, interacting with the crowd. The biggest fear in the league office is a repeat of the Malice in the Palace.
Get it.
Like, that is on the mind of everyone over there when you have crowd interaction. So the fact that Jokic elbowed someone, putting aside that it's Ishbia, the fact that he elbowed someone in the crowd, I think there's going to be a lot of conversation today in Olympic Tower in New York about how to punish him. My gut is fine. Something like nothing that takes Jokic out of the game.
They can't.
But this is going to be a tough call, Rich. I'm telling you, it's going to be a very tough one.
And I understand that for, you know, he even admitted it was a fan. Like, he didn't know it was the Suns owner, governor. So it doesn't matter. Just the whole concept is that somebody in street clothes was there and received an elbow from him. And you can't make contact with that. But his point is right. Like, you know, Ishbia's right hand was on his small of his back, and then he held on to the basketball, which is something.
Still not reason.
But he's trying to get the game going again. He's situationally in the moment of the game where he's going to grab the ball from the fan, hand it to the official, and see if he can get a 5-on-4 break going
right,
here.
But I get his argument. I understand what he's trying to say. Even if he had grabbed the ball, the referee still has to hold it, and the referee's not restarting play until Josh Okogie is like functional and away from the crowd. So it wouldn't have been a 5-on-4 break. I thought it would have been more explainable if there was a Nuggets player that had fallen to the crowd. If Jokic is going in there trying to protect his teammate, I think that would have worked more in his favor. But the fact that he just wanted to get the possession going again, and as part of that, he elbowed someone in the crowd, it's just not a good look. It's not a good look for Nikola Jokic. And I'm telling you, there are going to be people inside the league office that are pro suspension when they have this discussion.
Suspension would be
game five in a series this close where they've needed him. Wow.
I'll be honest. Suspension would be unacceptable. That's the
frankly,
way
I thought.
I understand. Look, I've been an NFL employee for 20 years, so I understand the way a league and league management looks at things when it involves a fan or the NFL doesn't have fan contact issues pretty much because fans are in the stands. This is a sport where there are fans who are truly one step away from having somebody sitting in their lap. I totally understand the malice in the palace. I get it. You cannot suspend Jokic. And I understand that he made contact with a fan. Fine him if you want. But then my question is what do they do about Ishbia? He can't hold on to the basketball like he owns it. Like, come on. You know, and I know he's new to the league, but he's not new to basketball.
Let me ask you this. Would a suspension for Nikola Jokic be more outrageous to you than the suspension to Draymond Green?
1,000,000%.
I'm not sure it would be that much more outrageous.
Why?
Because he elbowed someone in the crowd. And let's say that wasn't Matt Ishbia. Let's say that's a intoxicated fan of the Phoenix Suns who takes an elbow and comes back and throws a haymaker at Nikola Jokic. What, like, the fact that it didn't lead to a uglier incident,
yes.
I don't think that makes it any better. I would be less outraged by a Jokic suspension than I was over Draymond. I came out right away and said a suspension is outrageous. Sabonis grabbed his leg.
Yes.
Draymond stomped on him, kind of like it wasn't, you know, I thought Grant Williams got stomped on a lot worse by Joel Embiid. But I think that a Jokic suspension to me would be less outrageous than what happened to Draymond.
Really?
Yes.
Even though he touched Jokic first?
But let's be clear on touching him. He didn't shove Jokic, right? Like, put his hand on him a little bit, shouldn't have held onto the basketball. He didn't initiate an altercation with Jokic. I know, look, we're dissecting this
a
day after, and we're not in agreement on how it all played out. This happened split second, right? And Jokic just responded, threw a bit of an elbow there. I think Jokic overreacted in that moment. I do.
Well, I think we can all be in an agreement that what Ishbia tweeted out on Monday morning.
He had to tweet that.
No, I know he had to tweet it, but him saying, like, you know, there's nothing to see here. This shouldn't be a story. Man, come on. I'm sorry. I mean, he held onto a basketball in the middle of a heated moment. And, you know, he did receive an elbow to his upper chest or his neck area.
Flopped a little bit afterwards.
Well, I mean, and that also, TJ and I were talking about that, too, that if you ever have, like, the, just to, you know, defend the moment here, if you ever have, like, a folding chair seat right behind the back of your knees, you can easily lose your balance. Right. And I've never been shoved by somebody of Jokic's size. But that said, what adds to the moment is that if you do believe he flopped, it made it seem like the owner was trying to sell the moment to the officials to maybe get something, either the tech or something worse on Jokic in the moment.
Well, he was, because it wasn't just the fall. He threw his hands up in the air right afterwards in kind of a Draymond exaggeration.
So a governor of the NBA should not be doing that.
No.
So don't you think a fine or something should be coming in his direction?
Absolutely.
As well?
And, okay. And Matt Ishbia, if he does get fined, would, you know, pull that out of the, you know, seat cushions of his office. The bigger question coming into this is, does the NBA allow Nikola Jokic to elbow someone in the crowd?
No, I would understand why a fine would come. It's just, come on, suspending him for game five. Like this is...
I hope I'm wrong.
Really? The pivotal game five, you know, like, because game fives are either decisive or pivotal, you know, like, this is pivotal.
This
man.
Is going to be, you remember how the Draymond announcement came out? I think it was late Friday evening. Mm-hmm. Now, normally these announcements come out afternoon, like during business hours in the league office, because there's unanimity oftentimes on how things get adjudicated. This could be the same type of situation where whatever punishment is announced, whether it's a fine, upgraded to a flagrant foul, another technical add to whatever they decide to do. I could see this happening later in the day on Monday, because I think there will be a lot of discussion in the league office about how to handle this.
Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's move on to the game tonight, where I'm assuming you will be there tonight. And you called Lakers winning the West a while ago. Is this what you had in mind, pretty much?
Well, I think I had in mind that their defense is really good, and the numbers back that up ever since they made all the trades they made before the trade deadline. I saw Anthony Davis being dominant all through March, and I said, look, this is the old Anthony Davis. I understand we have to be wary about Anthony Davis getting injured at different times, but when I wrote what I wrote back in March, I'd seen him play through hard falls, bad ankle sprains, obviously dealing with the foot injury that had been lingering for him. So I believe that was transferable. And then it comes down to LeBron. Like, how many times do we bet against LeBron and he finds a way to come through? And the Lakers get to the free throw line an awful lot. That was true in the regular season. It's been true in the playoffs. Davis has been great. The role players are a lot better. Didn't expect D'Angelo Russell to be as good in some pivotal games in this postseason, but he has been an upgrade for them. This is not an aberration with the Lakers. This is what they have been since late January, early February, when Davis returned and they shook up the roster. So I'm a believer in what the Lakers are.
Okay, and so the Warriors, I asked this question of Ramona Shelburne last week, and I'll ask it to you now. The deep dive that will inevitably come on this Warriors season, what will it reveal? What is the iceberg we're just seeing the tip of? You're already seeing Greg Anthony tweeted out last night that, you know, Jordan Poole's numbers are down, you know, and he said, hey, anything happened that might have altered his mindset before the season? I mean, are we going to be talking about that punch once this thing's all over, do you think?
I think that we will be talking about how that incident in training camp affected the locker room during the season. But I think bigger picture for the Warriors, one of the things we'll be talking about is how their young players never really stepped into the bigger roles that Golden State expected. I mean, you look at the championship level runs that they've gone on. They've always had their core four, right? But they've also had Andre Iguodala playing a significant role, Gary Payton playing a significant role, Otto Porter last year, who I think he started one of those finals games, playing a significant role. The Warriors anticipated before the season that Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, and before he was traded, James Wiseman, somebody from that collection of players would step up and be able to be playing right now in significant roles right now. That really hasn't happened. They have been overly reliant on their star players to play above and beyond what they're capable of. And look, and Steph has been great most of the time.
Yes.
Klay has had, you know, his previous game was fantastic, but their margin for error got a lot smaller when Iguodala became unavailable, when they lost some of the other veterans that were on the roster. I think that is a bigger issue for this team right now than whatever dynamic exists with Jordan Poole. There will be a autopsy for Golden State after the season where they think, all right, if we do bring Draymond back, can we bring Draymond and Poole back into the mix? Do we have to think about trading Jordan Poole? You know, to fix whatever locker room dynamic might exist. Because you see, Rich, like, you hear about what's going on in the locker room, but you also see what's happening on the floor. The Sacramento series, game six, where Jordan Poole kind of brushes off Draymond.
Yes.
The body language from some of these Warriors players when Jordan Poole takes these ill-advised shots. There's obviously fire where this smoke is. I think that's something that definitely will have to be addressed if this season goes sideways.
And a lot of folks thought maybe that was put to bed with the famed Curry post game six home loss speech. Get on the bus. You're with us. If not, stay off the bus to Sacramento. And, you know, here we are now three games into this series and we're wondering what's going to happen tonight. Who the heck knows? I get it. But there's no doubt whatever happened in the beginning of the season is still lingering, right? I mean, isn't we can safely assume that?
I think the situation has evolved over the season.
Yes.
I think whereas initially for a couple of months, Draymond lost his ability to speak in that locker room. Like he had to prove himself all over again to that team. But I think as the season has played out, you know, I don't want to say the roles have reversed, but Draymond has certainly regained his place as a leader inside that locker room. And Jordan Poole, you know, for whatever reasons, I think most of it's on court, like kind of his lack of production or lack of consistent production on court has diminished him somewhat in the eyes of his teammates. That can change tonight. Like he could have an efficient 7-for-11 type game and the Warriors could run away with it. It's happened before, but as far as long term, that's definitely something I think will need to be addressed.
All right, Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show studios. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about the East, and then obviously Canelo. Hmm. You saw that in person. What a festival that was over the weekend. We'll take a break. Chris Mannix is here on the Rich Eisen Show studio. Don't you dare move. Kevin Pollak is also still to come. Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN. Back here on the Roku channel, a couple minutes, our radio audience will return. You got a Roberto Duran Panama shirt on?
What is this?
What do you got here?
I support all former boxers. Roberto Duran,
Is this does he have his own wear? Is that what it is?
It's a website that does a lot of boxing gear. So I buy a lot of boxing stuff from them.
Okay.
But, hands of stone.
What's the oldest boxing thing that you have?
Oldest boxing thing?
Whether it's an item, whether it's an article of clothing.
I don't know. It's newer clothing from older. I have a lot of Muhammad Ali gear, but it's very recently, woven or purchased.
So then what's the first fight you covered?
First fight I covered was Haseem Rahman versus James Toney at heavyweight. And that was in Atlantic City.
Damn.
And I was so excited about that fight. I even got locker room access to both guys so I could write my story.
Uh-huh.
And it was dreadful. It was a draw.
Oh.
And it wasn't even a good draw. It was just like one of those draws where it's like, let's all get past this and move on.
I once covered an Akinwande fight in New York.
Henry Akinwande,
and he got canceled because he got hepatitis.
Oh, ouch.
Which also people were translating as there wasn't enough ticket sales, so they canceled it.
That happens a lot. They
came up with hepatitis B.
That's basketball players used to be out with plantar fasciitis.
Yes.
That's the basketball version or the boxing version.
Load managing?
Yes.
There wasn't enough of a load of tickets. Yeah. That's the way it was described.
Was that pre or post title for Rahman?
That was for a version of the heavyweight title that he eventually didn't win. Because it was a draw. And James Toney was going for that heavyweight title as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't good.
Back in the day. Chris Mannix is here, fresh back from Guadalajara, where our radio audience is about to join us. We'll talk about Canelo Alvarez and, of course, the rest of the NBA playoffs. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. So Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated still here, and we'll talk a little bit about boxing. And I know I said we want to talk about the East, and we will. But I want to just jump in with what we talked about at the end of the first hour with Chris Brockman and the rest, giving voice to what so many NBA fans feel about Scott Foster. Is the NBA front office aware that fans view Scott Foster as not on the up and up in a way? And I'm not saying that he's on the take. I'm just saying that he does what the league wants to do to get the television audience having a seven-game series and stuff like that. Are they aware of this?
They're aware of it. Whenever I speak to league officials about that perception, what often I'll get bombarded with are facts and figures, statistics that show, or at least a reference to statistics that show, that Scott Foster is one of the most accurate referees that they have. And look, whether it's this game five with Lakers Warriors or the NBA Finals, he's involved in a lot of games. Now, fans might say, well, he's involved because the league, he'll do what the league says. And that perception is because of two things, right? One, his previous association with Tim Donaghy. You can't wash that away.
Yes.
They were friends before Donaghy was bounced from the league because of the gambling scandal. And the Chris Paul numbers. Like, every time Scott Foster has officiated a Chris Paul game over the last few years, it's been pointed out time and again that Chris Paul can't win when Scott Foster's out there. So I think it's been, you know, this two very high profile connections that have enhanced this perception of Scott Foster. I think he's a good referee. Like, I would challenge people to kind of point to multiple specific moments where he gets the call wrong. Like, I don't think he gets it wrong, or not a word, but I don't think he gets it more wrong than other top referees do.
Does that help you, Chris?
No.
But isn't that true, though? Don't you always, like, when you think Scott Foster, like, what do you point to with how he screws it up?
It's like, kind of like the NFL, right? You call holding on every play. It's about tone. Early, like, Anthony Davis is getting 2 fouls in the first quarter.
Okay, but
right?
if he does, then I'll come back here next time and say you're right. But when you're saying that, you're like, Scott Foster makes too many bad calls, I need to hear which ones
I'm not saying they're bad. You could call a foul on every drive to the hoop. You could call hand check on it. It's just tone.
Correct, but tell me which. You got to point to a game. You got to point to a specific incident, because I think that you are doing what I just said people are doing, which is associating him,
sure,
whether it's conscious or not,
yeah,
with Donaghy and with Chris Paul stuff.
You're probably right, and I don't have any specifics. I'll watch the game tonight, maybe take some good notes and get back to you, but it's just a perception. And when referees...
Well, he's not alone. You
when
know
referees,
that, right?
I get it, but again, I don't know if the perception is connected to the reality of the situation. What the NBA likes about Scott Foster is that he controls the game. Like, it's sometimes, look, like the incident from last night, you need a crew chief there that's in control in that situation.
Yeah.
Someone with experience, someone that's, you know, been part of big games. Scott Foster is that guy. That's why part of the reason why they like him so much.
But perception is reality. You can't have referees
trend
on Twitter. Like, that is just a bad look for the league.
Okay, if we're not going to, you can't allow Twitter to dictate, like, who...
NBA Twitter is a powerful force.
It shouldn't be an influential one, though. You shouldn't be looking, if you're
the league can't be happy that Foster is trending every time he's refereeing.
What are you going to do about it, though? Like, if you're Monty McCutcheon, who's the NBA referees are, like, if you're going to see Scott Foster trending on Twitter, he's also very recognizable. You'll know what Scott Foster looks like. You can't pick, like, Bill Kennedy out of a lineup most NBA
true.
Referees.
Fair.
So
yeah.
So I think that's part of it. But if you're Monty McCutcheon and you're like, all right, big game coming up, we're going to assign a certain referee. Oh, damn. Stevie7293 says Scott Foster sucks.
You cannot
go by what Twitter tells you.
I can't believe you just called out your burner account, Chris.
Sorry, man.
This is Josiah, who, like, has pretty big influence and worldwide wob, and these guys, they're making reference to all these stats how Scott Foster is.
I think
he's got a perception.
You know, that's why I ask if the league's aware. Does Monty McCutcheon dress like that all the time?
All the time.
Really?
All the time. I was in the NBA bubble with Monty for a while. He's
bow tied in the bubble? Bubble bow tied?
Yeah, part of the time. Yeah. Like, I saw the last game Monty McCutcheon refereed. I was texting people in the league office. Like, I can't take, or Monty McCutcheon was doing some of the talk back.
Yes.
I'm like, I can't take Monty seriously when he's dressed like a leprechaun. Like, I can't.
It's
very difficult.
Yeah.
Lucky. I love the guy. He's a great guy.
It is funny. Every single time he pops on, I didn't think about this. I was hankering for a bowl of Lucky Charms.
Yes.
Now I understand it. So is Scott Foster going to take Steve Javy's role, right? Pretty much. One day, will he be... Will he be...
Those guys, like... Again, I like Steve Javi, known him a long time, but like, I need a independent referees rules analyst that is willing to go after his former colleagues.
You need a Mike Pereira.
A Mike Pereira. In the boxing world, I used to work with Steve Smoger, who was a great referee, passed away recently. And whenever we would go to Steve Smoger for something that happened in the ring, if the referee got it wrong, Steve Smoger would slap him around a little bit. I kind of want that. I never feel like I get that from Steve Javi. I don't feel like he ever
always backs the referees.
Yeah. I don't want that. You got to have some independence in that situation, a fearlessness that comes with going after your former colleagues.
I've got Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's your take on Celtics Sixers so far and what happens from here on out?
First of all, phenomenal game for James Harden. Like, I was among the people on Saturday, or Friday rather, jumping up and down on him for the way he played. I mean, because when he went in the tank for games 2 and game 3, it gave license to go after him for everything else he's done in the past. All those playoff flameouts in Houston, the couple of bad games he had in Oklahoma City in the postseason. Like, we were once again seeing James Harden wilt in those big moments. Everything he did in game 1, inconsequential. Game 2 and 3, just in the tank. For him to come out and play like that and make shots like that, all credit in the world for him. I came into the series believing Boston was significantly better. The Celtics have owned the Sixers over the last couple of years, regular season, postseason. So James Harden playing like that was remarkable. Can James Harden keep it up? That to me is the biggest question. Embiid's going to be great. Like, I mean, people talk about him deserving MVP. Might deserve Defensive Player of the Year. He's such a dominant force in the paint. He's going to be great. I feel Maxey's going to be okay. I don't know what I'm going to get in James Harden in Game 5. I don't know which version of him is going to show up. He doesn't have to be the star of Games 1 and Game 4, but he can't be whatever that was in Game 2 and Game 3. That's the big question in the series. The Celtics, they've got great perimeter defenders. James Harden's got to be better. That, to me, is the big question going to Game 5.
So there's no variables on the Celtics side of things?
Because it's more about how their perimeter defense plays, right? They've been great. They were great in Game 2 and Game 3. And the strength of their defense is Jaylen Brown, who was great against Harden, and then the three guards, Derek White, Marcus Smart, Malcolm Brogdon. They should be able to make Harden, Maxey, D'Anthony Melton inefficient. They're that good. They can switch everything. They're that good. It's a battle of strengths in this series with the backcourt of the Sixers and the backcourt of the Celtics. Whoever comes out of that matchup, what's out of that battle with the win, I think wins the game in the series.
And what about the conference? How do you feel about that sense of having watched the Heat dispatch with the Bucks and then now be up 2-1 going into tonight's game against the Knicks? Do you get the sense that the best of three, if you will, that starts in Boston is going to determine the conference? Or what do you got for me there?
Yeah, I think whoever wins the Celtics series will be, Celtics Sixers will be the favorite going into that round. I just can't figure Miami out. Like, I watched them all season long, and they just looked like something was missing. You know, whether it was personnel, attitude, you know, whatever. It felt like something was off with that team. And then you watch the play-in game where Atlanta just goes down there and beats the daylights off them. You're like, all right, they're done. First round fodder for Milwaukee. But they just, starting with Jimmy Butler, they just raised their game, everyone, top to bottom, to another level in the postseason. I think they're a favorite against the Knicks tonight. We'll see. Can Julius Randle step up and have a monster game? Can Jalen Brunson play better than he's played in previous games? But I don't know. Miami's just really hard to figure out. Like Boston last year, they were a Jimmy Butler missed three-pointer, like a couple of inches from losing that series in 7. That's basically the same team down in Miami that they played once again. Maybe Tyler Hero finds his way back on the floor early rather than later. I think the Celtics or the Sixers beat the Knicks. I don't know what to make of Miami at this point.
So Miami could actually...
They could. They're a built-for-playoff team. They, you know, we hear that it's a cliche in basketball and sports, you're a plug-and-play, right? Plug-and-play player. Miami's proof of that. Like, Duncan Robinson is in street clothes for most of the last, like, 3 months.
Yes.
Tyler Hero goes out. Here comes Duncan Robinson back in, looking like the guy we saw in the bubble. You know, Max Strus making shots. Gabe Vincent making shots. All these guys that anyone could have signed at any point in time. They come down to Miami, and all of a sudden, they become better versions of themselves. Miami's just different. The way they do things is different.
You can't sit here. We can't sit here and say that we don't get a bubble rematch in the finals.
We might.
Like, that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
With fans and everything this time around. Give me a good Jimmy Butler story. You got one? I mean, because he is one of the most fascinating to me superstars that got, you know, Bulls were had him, and then the Sixers had a shot. Obviously, Minnesota had him. And he's dominant. He can be as dominant as any superstar in this league. And he's remarkable. The guy's remarkable. You got a good one for him?
I don't have a specific Jimmy Butler story. I heard Jeff Teague tell a good story recently about that famed practice in Minnesota where Jimmy Butler with the G League Timberwolves just kicked the crap out of the starters, ripped off his warm-up shirt to reveal a Minnesota jersey with the Minnesota cutout of the front of it, which is peak Jimmy Butler. What you know about Jimmy Butler is that it takes a special type of coach and a special type of culture and a special type of roster to maximize him. Like, you put him on Philadelphia next to Joel Embiid, and he's great because Jimmy and Joel Embiid have the same mindset, win at all costs kind of mindset. Jimmy and Ben Simmons don't have the same mindset. And Jimmy was kind of ahead of the curve on Ben Simmons, kind of knowing that there was something off. He was. Like, there was something a little bit off with Ben Simmons. But you put him in Miami where Eric Spoelstra, remember that scene late in the season this year where Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler were going to get into each other.
Of course.
And Eric says, "What, you want to fight me now?" That's Jimmy Butler. Like, but you have to have a coach that is willing to kind of brush that off. It's like, whatever. This is what happens. It's intense. Watch us in practice. Like, I think there's, you know, there's 30 teams in the NBA. Jimmy might not be able to play for 28 of them.
No,
at least
kidding.
Not at this level that he's playing at right now. He is in the perfect situation in Miami with that roster, with that coach, with Bam Adebayo, with the guys down there that play with an edge. And as long as he's playing at this level, you can't count Miami out. I mean, you don't really run plays for Jimmy Butler. Like, Jimmy Butler just takes the ball and he's like, you know what? I'm better than these guys. I'm going to take it at these guys. I'm going to shoot mid-range jumpers on these guys. Like, he just believes wholeheartedly that when he has the ball in his hands, he's better than the guy in front of him.
Last guy that guy across the way wants to see in the Eastern Conference Finals. Don't want to see
so
him.
I'm so happy that the Hawks beat them in the play-in so they weren't the seventh seed.
Yeah.
To go against the Celtics.
I would not. I mean, everybody kind of attributes the Bucks lost to Giannis's injury. And there's some truth to that. Look, he missed 2.5 games in that series. But
they won one of those games.
Right. And they lost, and the Bucks lost all three that Giannis played in, that played any part in. So I don't know. I can tell you that being around that Boston organization, they got the matchup they wanted in that first round. A little harder than they thought, having to go six games, but they got the matchup they wanted. And now, if you ask them, the Celtics right now obviously focused on Philly, but
they want the Knicks.
Yeah, you want the Knicks. You'd much rather play the Knicks if you're the Celtics than have to deal with that Miami team and that coach. I mean, Eric Spoelstra versus Joe Mazzulla is a tough matchup. Like, Eric Spoelstra's got
not
experience.
Even close. Like, Spoelstra's so much a better. Why doesn't Joe Mazzulla call timeouts?
That was a bad look. And I think Joe even admitted it afterward, but that was a bad look. Overtime, one possession, ball in the backcourt. I know you don't want Philadelphia to sub in some more defensive players, but you got to call time out there. You got to set something up.
Walking up, and then Tatum just stood there at the top. It was just. And then why is Jaylen Brown doubling off of Harden when he's been torching them all night?
He admitted that was a mistake, too. Like, that was a whiff. I don't know that a timeout necessarily helps that, but 15 seconds left, you got to call a timeout and run the play. It makes you wonder, like, does Joe Mazzulla, do the Celtics have confidence that they're going to draw up the kind of play that makes the timeout worth it? Or is it better to just try to catch the Sixers, catch whatever team, backpedaling, not able to set their own defense? Maybe it's a calculation on their part that the way things are moving is better than if you call a timeout and drop your own play.
It just further illustrates that Ime Udoka was the toughest guy on that team.
Ime Udoka got a lot of that team. But look, if Joe Mazzulla wins the series, you got to give him credit for that too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Brad Stevens was the king of dialing up plays, call timeout, and they would, what, basically at 100% of them.
I like
I've got Chris Mannix here. A couple more minutes left for the Sports Illustrated senior writer here. What was it like in Guadalajara being right there for Canelo Alvarez and that whole scene? What was that like?
The best sports atmosphere I've ever been a part of.
Get out of here.
Best, without question. You had 50,000 Guadalajarans and people from the outskirts of the area as well. Mm-hmm. Packed into a soccer stadium. The entrance, the ring walk, the 150-piece mariachi band playing for Canelo Alvarez. Just the, it was intense in there watching Canelo make that walk to the ring. And I give Canelo Alvarez a lot of credit for doing that. Like, he still made north of $20 million. Mm-hmm. But he's accustomed to making north of $30 million. He took a pretty significant pay cut to come down to Guadalajara. Ringside tickets for that fight went for like $2,000, which mm-hmm. is still pretty expensive for the area. Ringside tickets in Vegas, $18,000, $19,000, something like that. Uh-huh. Site fees in Vegas, big money. But he wanted to bring a fight to his hometown. He did it, and I think it was well worth it. Everything about that event was incredible. The fight itself, if you were skeptical of Canelo Alvarez still being the face of boxing, mm-hmm. the number one star in boxing, you probably left feeling pretty good about that, because 3 years ago, Canelo Alvarez knocks out John Ryder, doesn't let him survive that fifth round knockdown. Now, not as great stamina-wise, maybe not as good a finisher as he used to be, still a top 10 pound-for-pound guy, but I wonder after that fight if we have seen the best days of Canelo Alvarez behind him.
But it was still an incredible scene.
Incredible scene.
We'll never forget.
Incredible scene.
So I know next up on the fight game is something that you give me your itinerary for tonight and where you're going. You were you were sitting down.
Lakers. This is great. Yeah. Lakers tonight.
Yep.
And then there's a 1:30 a.m. flight out of LAX that I'm going to catch.
Why not?
That takes me to Dallas for the Jake Paul, Nate Diaz press conference on Tuesday, which is going to be quite the scene. Is Jake Paul, you guys, we were talking about this before we went on air about, yes. you know, Nate Diaz, does that incident he had in New Orleans put the fight in jeopardy? Not this kind of fight. That makes the fight even bigger. Nate Diaz
choking
just randomly
out
choking out some guy.
Okay.
And Nate, but isn't the lesson learned in that? Like, don't step to Nate Diaz. Like, I don't know what, like, I don't know how that all happened.
Why would
like,
you ever step to Nate Diaz?
I mean, what are you doing? Like, you have to know who you're stepping to.
I have a feeling alcohol was involved.
It's Bourbon Street? Yep, yeah, Bourbon I have a feeling about that. But that only makes that event, I think, a little bit bigger.
Okay. And so, how huge is this event going to be?
It's going to be big. It's at American Airlines Center on August 5th.
Yep.
And look at, you know, Jake Paul, people always want to see him now test himself against real boxers. This is why he doesn't do it. Because even if Jake Paul fought a rematch against Tommy Fury, it wouldn't be anywhere near as big as what Jake Paul against Nate Diaz is going to be. Jake Paul against Anderson Silva in Arizona was huge. And mostly because all of Anderson Silva's fans showed up. Jake Paul wasn't the attraction at that point. Anderson Silva was. In Dallas, there are going to be 10,000 plus Nate Diaz fans packing that building. The face-offs are going to be intense. The fight week is going to be intense. Security is probably going to be tripled because of what could happen between these two guys. I'm telling you, when you get to that first week in August, it's oftentimes a dead week in sports, right? NFL training camp just starting to open. Basketball is basically wrapped. The sporting world is going to take notice of Jake Paul against Nate Diaz.
I'll be at the potential polar opposite in terms of intensity event that, you know, Pro Football Hall of Fame speeches of that day.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll be in Canton, Ohio. You know, Paul
some good trash
Diaz,
talk there.
You know, in terms of the intensity of a Paul Diaz fight and then the intensity of a Joe Klecko acceptance speech. You know, I mean, by the way, I say that just because Klecko is the funniest word I could possibly say. Although I'm very excited as a Jet fan to see a member of the SAC Exchange go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But that's where I'll be on that day.
I'll send pictures.
Chris, really quick, since we're still on the boxing thing, Haney and Lomachenko's coming up, man. And to me, I mean, I know Paul and Nate's is a spectacle, but this is a real fight to me. What are your thoughts on this fight coming up?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody this morning associated with that fight, and he was telling me that a couple of weeks out, Lomachenko is in as good a shape as he's ever been. He is completely locked in for this fight. And I think the big question going into fight week is, how hard is it for Devin Haney to get down to 135 pounds? He is a big, big 135 pounder. If this Lomachenko fight did not materialize, he would probably be fighting already at 140 pounds. Devin is as disciplined as they come, but he's in his mid-20s now. He's been fighting at 135 pounds for a long time. Mm-hmm. If he is at all diminished going into this fight, at all drained weight-wise, this is a fight for Vasily Lomachenko. Even at the backstage, the Canelo stage, if you will, of his career, it's a fight Lomachenko can definitely win.
Okay.
What's next for Ryan Garcia?
I would guess that after Ryan Garcia decides on a new trainer, whether it's a return to Eddie Reynoso, which I think is possible. I think someone like Dean Campos, who used to train my colleague Sergio Mora, is someone that would work well with Ryan Garcia. You're going to see him in at least two lower tier fights. I think Mercito Hesta, throw a name out there. He's someone that beat Jojo Diaz in his last fight. That's a fight that's a safe fight for Ryan Garcia to take before the end of the year. Then one more fight before we start talking about Ryan against any of the big names in the 140-pound division.
Yeah, take Davis, kind of put him to sleep there.
I think you learn a lot from a fight like that, for sure.
And perfect person to have here on the show today, talking boxing and NBA playoffs with Chris Mannix. So I guess the final question is, when is Jokic Ishbia 2? When does that happen?
Man, I can tell you, Matt Ishbia is praying right now that Nikola Jokic doesn't get suspended. He does not want any part of being...
That's, of course not.
That tweet was perfect. That was exactly what he needed to say. But to put a button on this, there's going to be a lot of conversation today. I'm telling you, a lot of conversation. You cannot put your hands on anyone in the crowd. If it was a regular season game,
yes,
no question, Nikola Jokic suspended for the next one. But game five, can the league do it?
They shouldn't do it. I hope they don't do it. And you're right. Ishbia's tweet was perfect. Like, hey, great game last night. That should be front and center. I have nothing but respect for Jokic. Go Suns. It's just like, but, you know, Jokic.
What a run for Matt Ishbia. Like, takes over the team 15 minutes later, trades for Kevin Durant, second round of the playoffs. He's in the stands, literally, physically altercating, if that's a word,
I know,
with Nikola Jokic.
Look, you're right. The league should just call up Jokic and say, don't touch a fan. Mm. And call up Ishbia and say, no more jump balls. Okay?
What helps Jokic?
Like no held possession. Anymore.
What helps Jokic is that he doesn't have history of this. Like,
right.
Draymond, obviously, a lot of history there. So I think that's going to certainly work in Jokic's favor. And if I was in the prediction game, I think it whatever punishment is something less than a suspension for game five. But there will be people pushing for a suspension.
Here's my answer. Jokic gets fined. And Ishbia's got to sit next to Jokic's brothers at the next Nuggets game in Denver.
You seen video of those guys?
I have.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Those guys don't.
They don't play. That's his punishment. His seat, he's got to sit right in between Jokic's brothers in Denver.
There's tough and there's Serbian tough. Okay? Like, just saying.
I was waiting for his brothers to come bum rushing when that whole thing happened. I was like, where are they at?
That's why you give it. By the way, Ishbia would give up possession.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Thanks for coming in, Chris.
Anytime, Rich.
That's it. Chris Mannix here of Sports Illustrated here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't go anywhere. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
I did not approve this, but, you know, that's part of me delegating to you, our social media grandmaster. You put out on Instagram a photograph. It says Breaking Bears Trading for Russell Wilson. And what's today's date? What's today's
date?
It
is April 1st, Rich.
And that is what? It is April Fool's Day. So it's 5 minutes to air, and I have my phone's on the desk, and it's buzzing, and
yeah,
and I see it is you know, it's Jeff Garland. Is the caller there? Is the caller there on the Rich?
Yes. Jeff from Chicago.
What's funny about it? Nothing's funny about it. Nothing is funny about it. Our friend Doug Robinson texts me.
Yes.
Capital left. Russell Wilson. He says, you know, Rich doesn't usually get the scoops. Adam Schefter should be on this. Well, that should have made me suspicious.
Yeah.
But no, I have so much respect for the Rich Eisen Show that I know that they have connections that nobody else has.
That's true.
Well, you know what, Rich? I'm not going to swear, but I got to tell you, your little social media boy, he's going to get his. Oh, my God.
TJ, do you have anything to say to Jeff Garland?
Yeah. Happy April Fool's Day.
All right. Hey, TJ, you don't know what you've brought down on yourself. You don't even have a clue.
I'm ready for it.
You know the power that I have, especially in practical jokes. I'm going to nail you so hard.
Pause.
You know what? I hope you enjoy your testicles right now because they're going to disappear.
No, but I need them.
Oh, my God.
Fantastic. That's on our archive, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show, our full almost 9-year archive of this program. Back
April
here
Fools.
On our program, fun stuff with Chris Mannix right there.
Great.
Soup to nuts, if you will.
He covers a lot of ground, too.
He does, man. He sure does. So I just had a nice chat with Kevin Pollak in our green room.
Oh, nice.
So great to see him here, man. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. One of my favorite shows, period, end of story. And then, of course, so many great movies that Kevin's been in. He'll be joining us in just a little bit less than a half an hour from now.
Nice.
Huge moment for me personally this weekend.
Yeah, it was.
I just want to say this. My son, Coop, who doesn't want to be called Coop Tani, doesn't like that.
Oh, he's got to get familiar.
He doesn't need that. My 12-year-old son stepped to the plate. Man stands at the plate. It's time for what?
Individual achievement.
Okay. And so he had not hit a home run in his little league career, and he was coming close. And his first home run, he hit it on Saturday, right around where the Kentucky Derby was. Might have been around post time. So I missed the Derby. How was it, by the way?
It was, you know, it's the fastest 2 minutes in sports.
Run
man.
For the roses. It's,
it was good. Okay.
So was missing it. And I was wondering maybe I should, you know, stream it because my son's team gave up a 7th spot in the first.
Oof.
And was down 9-0, then 9-1. And then just when you thought we might get mercy ruled, they put together a huge inning in which they went from 9-1 to 9-8. 2 outs, bases full of Little League Rockies, and my son stands at the plate, bases full, and yanked it out of the park for a grand slam home run.
It was so awesome.
And I lost it.
As you should.
As you should.
I totally lost it. It was my greatest achievement of my life. No, it's definitely I'll never forget it. And he ran around, and his teammates, you know, had, you know, jumped at home plate with him.
He's doing like the Kirk Gibson round in second.
He put his hands on his head like Tom Brady after winning his first Super Bowl. You know, he couldn't believe it. I'll never forget it. He crushed it. He absolutely smoked it.
Yeah, you sent us some video. And
sent you some videos.
The sound of the right off the bat, you could tell.
Went and got the baseball.
Yeah, because that's the last thing you said in the video. I got to get that ball.
Yeah, I sent you guys the video.
It was awesome, but man. It
also,
was,
you did
I was
the thing that we all do when we watch games and, you know, someone hits one, and you're like, get out!
I
like,
did
you,
scream that.
Like, but you it was want
then,
to go?
It was then no doubt about it. And so, incredible. Just an incredible moment.
Great, man.
Yeah, so.
I'm going to put that on our IG story, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't know if I want to.
You don't want to do it? Okay.
What it's was not post-game just that, like? Did he want a celebratory meal?
Well, again, Susie and I went to a bar mitzvah. As a matter of fact, she wasn't there because she was getting ready for it. Oh. So she was, you know.
Oh, she missed it?
It's truly one of the only games she's missed all year.
Wow, I know that hurts.
But we FaceTimed as we were picking up the baseball. And then she said hi to Coop because, you know, it's not a major league game. He can go right in the dugout. So.
Yeah. Sure. You know, Rich, my favorite part of that video that you sent us was Taylor going and hugging him. Because I know how brothers and sisters are. I have two myself. So that moment was, that had to be almost
as great. She did hop in there as well. And, you know, bless her. How am I doing today on this program? Because I'm a little bit sleep deprived.
We're good.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
You're doing better than
a little bit sleep deprived.
Tom and Shiv, so you're fine.
I appreciate that. Spoiler alert. She's nine. When she has a bad dream.
Dude, we've been going through that a little bit recently.
Have you really? Yeah. Okay, ready. Yeah. I hope Cage doesn't do what she does.
Well, Cage is doing flat out screams in the middle of the night.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's better than this. But she comes in the room and says nothing. And then whispers, Dad, Mom, Dad. Like that. And then that kind of gets me awake. And then I look up and she's at the foot of the bed and she's got long hair.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah.
Standing there.
Hey.
There's a very Blair Witch vibe to this whole situation.
The ring.
The ring.
Oh, my God.
The ring.
It's just like
middle of the night.
I'm glad she whispers because it prevents, you know, anything to keep Susie from being awakened. Because
and your 14 dogs.
Two. Two dogs.
You have a lot of dogs.
Oh, my God. She just stands there at the end of the bed with this long hair and doesn't say a word. My heart skips a beat.
Yeah.
Then I kick into Father of the Year mode. So I'm a little bit out there. Understood. Oh, hey, by the way, the phrase that pays on this show is what? Hell going on.
Hell going on.
We know that, right? Of the hell going on month of March, two Marches ago with this huge day in the NFL offseason, and Stephon Diggs tweeted out the hell going on. And then we had him at the Super Bowl say the words. Because he tweeted out the hell going on for the free agency month, and when I guess Tyreek Hill was getting traded and all that craziness was happening.
The morning that Tyreek got dealt. Yeah.
So James Harden had a huge game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? Yesterday.
He did.
A lot of folks were wondering, was there anything different? Well, I guess Doc Rivers texted him a gospel song on his phone coming to work, and Harden talked about receiving said text.
I'm on the way to the game and I get a text from Doc and I'm like, what the hell is going on? This is a gospel song, and I'm like, all right, whatever. So I just tell my homies, let's play the song. And it's a 7-minute song, but it's like, I let the whole song play and I'm like, all right, it gotta be some kind of good juju in this song or whatever, however he's feeling, I wanna feel like that. I mean, I guess it works.
There you go. So, he said the hell going on.
He did.
We got another one.
Hell going on.
We got another
hell
one.
Going on.
Yeah, we're gonna collect them. So now you wonder. Now, if you're Doc Rivers, do you send him a gospel song every time he's going to work?
Absolutely.
Before game five?
I would think so.
Literally, you go down whatever greatest hits you can get.
Absolutely.
How about Doc?
Also, good on James Harden. He had one of the Michigan State shooting victims at
yes,
the game.
Yes, in a wheelchair.
Yeah,
so that was by, awesome.
That was cool. Shoes. Pre and post game, that was cool.
James Harden is having...
He went to Vegas, too, and they're off.
He's living his best life, but he's also...
Chris, you understand
he's living
that.
The right life right
hey, man,
now.
Man, I love James Harden.
You would never guess that about you either. James Harden's one of your favorites.
The hell going on?
What
hell going
player?
On? The hell going on? Kevin Pollak's going to join us shortly on this program. Overreaction Monday, still to come as well. Right here. So your son is screaming out in the middle of the night?
I don't know what's going on.
So you're like dead asleep, and then suddenly you hear a 3-year-old in the other room screaming.
Yes, just screaming. It goes on for, you know, several seconds. It's long. And then we kind of do the grog awake. You're like, did you hear that? Yeah. What should we do? Well, let's see if he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
And then a second one will come. And then, all right, one of us has to go in. And
okay.
Yeah.
The whispering and the standing wordlessly that with is, the long hair. And you see the silhouette creepy. Through, you know.
For sleep-covered eyes.
Oh, my God.
That is a little creepy.
I feel like I should take a picture of it, and then we'll create a movie poster, The Awakening. Doesn't that sound like a horror movie? The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Mom, Dad.
That actually might be a horror movie.
Dad. Mom, Dad.
Did she tell you what the nightmare was?
The Awakening was a movie in 2011.
There you go. Is it a Sam Raimi film?
Dominic West, though.
Okay.
From, you know.
So, no, I didn't ask that because I don't want conversations. We need to go back to sleep. We don't need conversations. It'll be something when I pick her up from school today, if I do.
Then you'll talk about
it. Yes. Correct.
Does she tell you what she's dreaming about? Because Cage can't say that yet.
She can do it.
Okay.
But like I said, at 4 something in the morning, we don't want that.
Right.
We're not chit-chatting.
Right.
We're kind of calm down and go to sleep so you don't stand there and whisper at daddy when he's dead asleep.
Dad.